We'd be outraged if our government invested in expensive telescopes for the sole purpose of searching for orbiting teapots. But we can appreciate the case for spending money on SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, using radio telescopes to scan the skies in the hope of picking up signals from intelligent aliens.
I praised Carl Sagan for disavowing gut feelings about alien life. But one can, and Sagan did, make a sober assessment of what we would need to know in order to estimate the probability. This might start from nothing more than a listing of our points of ignorance, as in the famous Drake equation, which, in Paul Davies's phrase, collects probabilities. It states that to estimate the number of independently evolved civilizations in the universe, you must multiply 7 terms together. The 7 include the number of stars, the number of Earth-like planets per star, and the probability of this, that, and the other, which I need not list, because the only point I'm making is that they are all unknown, or estimated with enormous margins of error. When so many terms that are either completely or almost completely unknown are multiplied up, the product, the estimated number of alien civilizations, has such colossal error bars that agnosticism seems a very reasonable, if not the only credible, stance.
Some of the terms in the Drake equation are already less unknown than when he first wrote it down in 1961. At that time, our solar system of planets orbiting a central star was the only one known, together with the local analogies provided by Jupiter's and Saturn's satellite systems. Our best estimate of the number of orbiting systems in the universe was based on theoretical models coupled with the more informal principle of mediocrity, the feeling, born of uncomfortable history lessons from Copernicus, Hubble and others, that there should be nothing particularly unusual about the place where we happen to live. Unfortunately, the principle of mediocrity is in its turn emasculated by the anthropic principle, see Chapter 4. If our solar system really were the only one in the universe, this is precisely where we, as beings who think about such matters, would have to be living. The very fact of our existence could retrospectively determine that we live in an extremely unmediocre place. But today's estimates of the ubiquity of solar systems are no longer based on the principle of mediocrity. They are informed by direct evidence. The spectroscope, nemesis of Comte's positivism, strikes again. Our telescopes are scarcely powerful enough to see planets around other stars directly, but the position of a star is perturbed by the gravitational pull of its planets as they whirl around it, and spectroscopes can pick up the Doppler shifts in the star's spectrum, at least in cases where the perturbing planet is large. Mostly using this method, at the time of writing, we now know of 170 extrasolar planets orbiting 147 stars, but the figure will certainly have increased by the time you read this book. So far, they are bulky Jupiters, because only Jupiters are large enough to perturb their stars into the zone of detectability of present-day spectroscopes.
We have at least quantitatively improved our estimate of one previously shrouded term of the Drake equation. This permits a significant, if still moderate, easing of our agnosticism about the final value yielded by the equation. We must still be agnostic about life on other worlds, but a little bit less agnostic because we are just that bit less ignorant. Science can chip away at agnosticism in a way that Huxley bent over backwards to deny for the special case of God. I am arguing that, notwithstanding the polite abstinence of Huxley, Gould, and many others, the God question is not in principle and forever outside the remit of science. As with the nature of the stars, contra Kant, and as with the likelihood of life in orbit around them, science can make at least probabilistic inroads into the territory of agnosticism. My definition of the God hypothesis included the words superhuman and supernatural. To clarify the difference, imagine that a SETI radio telescope actually did pick up a signal from outer space which showed unequivocally that we are not alone. It is a non-trivial question, by the way, what kind of signal would convince us of its intelligent origin. A good approach is to turn the question around. What should we intelligently do in order to advertise our presence to extraterrestrial listeners? Rhythmic pulses wouldn't do it. Jocelyn Bell Burnell, the radio astronomer who first discovered the pulsar in 1967, was moved by the precision of its 1.33-second periodicity to name it, tongue-in-cheek, the LGM, Little Green Men, signal. She later found a second pulsar elsewhere in the sky and of different periodicity,